Right, and Discussions of Truth, Wednesday, 4:15, coming your way with guest. This is the 4 o'clock hour, Eastern Standard Time, Ian Trottier. We have, for the past few weeks, because of the, really the coronavirus issue going on globally, we brought to you an hour early segment. In fact, we had four guests on the program. That was a four-hour show 2 weeks ago. Last 2 weeks, we've had three guests join the program. The need for discussion, conversation, is becoming more and more apparent in today's world, and certainly with the media outlets reporting conflicting stories. We've got a complete mess in the White House. You've got various different angles of how to deal with this pandemic. And unfortunately, it seems that in a world of an increasing fake reporting, fake news, one must do their due diligence to dig individually. Therefore, the rise of independent media becoming more important and, unfortunately, abundant, because the average American simply unable to put trust in their main media outlets. This is very unfortunate. The United States being a beacon and standard, one would hope, for constitutional values, the republic that stands currently, at least via facade, and the democratic values that put those to lead it in place by means of vote. Again, this is becoming an increasing threat. So what we have here is a global pandemic, a health pandemic, and in the United States, the man occupying the Oval Office, giving briefings that simply report differently from what other mainstream media outlets are reporting. Anyway, so last week, Michael Snyder joined the program at the 6 o'clock hour. He runs the Economic Collapse blog. He's been doing so now for over 10 years. He's got a JD from the University of Florida. And I believe he's also got an LLM, which is a Master's of Law, from that same school. We also hosted Zach Voorhees. He occupied the main slot at the 5 o'clock hour. He's a Google whistleblower. And his 950-page cachet to the Department of Justice reveals some pretty disgusting behavior of Google and what they do with the information that is put into their search engines. There's parallels there, of course, with the behemoth Facebook. But as one steps back now, during this coronavirus era that we're facing now, one asks, why does a computer engineer in the, is he the co-founder with Paul Allen of Microsoft? That would be Bill Gates. Why does his opinion weigh on the media and make its way into your homes so heavily? Well, right. One must connect the dots. He's not a health official. He's not a medical doctor. I suppose he could be a computer scientist. Yes, that's accurate. So he is a scientist, but he's not a health or medical scientist. So why would his opinion on how to deal with the coronavirus be of importance? Why would his view be mega blasted through television, internet radio? Well, let's see. Microsoft still has a very prominent place in the way that we conduct ourselves globally. And the money that has been driven into his coffers has been invested into different things such as vaccine groups, something called a digital identification. So is he merely pushing his own personal agenda? And one of the main arguments that I make on this program is, look, if you are unaware of the banking system and where that money is going, the facade being, in this case, the Federal Reserve. It's a private organization. It's not federal. It doesn't represent you. It represents a very wealthy and powerful group of people behind the box, locked box. It doesn't get audited of a central bank. That is what a Federal Reserve is, and that's what the Federal Reserve is. So if you are unable to look inside that box, if you're unable to look at who those shareholders are, what companies they own, and how they might be manipulating an economy in the way that you live your life as the average Joe or the average Ian is a more or less slave to that economic structure, i.e. Gas in a car, gas in airplanes, gas into trucks transporting food and other cars for the consumer to purchase, then how is one able to ever question things? So to look at the coronavirus as a possible economic invasion is perhaps startling for most to consider. But there is increasing evidence. Whitney Webb, type her name into your search engine, and there you will find something called the Dark Winter associated with the anthrax attacks after 9/11, 2001. You'll also find recent meetings headed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that sponsored how to deal with, in collaboration with Johns Hopkins University, how to deal with biological warfare or again under the guise or facade, I'll say, of a global health pandemic. Is that biological war on you? Is the coronavirus a biological war on you? It's completely ground to a halt the U.S. economy. Completely ground it to a halt. So where do I base all of this from? And by the way, the week prior, we had on American historian A. Ralph Epperson. We had a Lindstroth report with J.P. Lindstroth. He's got a PhD from Oxford. And we had on Tobias Churton from the UK talking about Aleister Crowley. So anyway, how and why could the coronavirus be used as an economic war on you. Okay, it's completely ground to a halt the American economy. Completely grounded to a halt. Are the numbers really that startling? Go to Worldometers. Worldometers, just as it sounds, ometers.info. And there you will find, I don't know what engines run this, but there you will find some numbers on the coronavirus. What are we at? What are the cases right now? Let's see. Let me bring this up quickly. I think we're more or less looking at about 12,000, just under 12,000 deaths now in the U.S. And what cases we've got? Over 250,000, I think. Again, I'm not looking at the statistics on the website at the moment. Let me see if I can bring this up here. Coronavirus cases worldwide, 1.5 million, basically. Okay, is that worldwide or, yeah. Okay, 87,000 deaths worldwide. There have been 319 recovered by the coronavirus. Now, we're going to skip down to the United States. Total cases, okay, approaching now 500,000. So you got 422,000 coronavirus cases in the U.S. right now. Okay, up, I'm assuming that's today, 22,000. We have total death count now. Now, this is jumping largely by day, so no doubt about that. 2 days ago, I think it was around about 10,000. So just in a couple days, it seems to grow by 1,000, 2,000 now. A day in the past couple days, 14,463 is what worldometers.info is reporting at this moment. And yes, today there are 1,622 new deaths. Okay, so how do those numbers compare to the H1N1 virus that supposedly started incepted out of Mexico, was it, and then went global. This is about 10 years ago, 2009. So H1N1 cases, there were 60 million H1N1 cases, and there were 12,000 deaths. And these are U.S. numbers, so 60 million U.S. cases, and there were 12,000 U.S. deaths from the H1N1. So why is the coronavirus, why is the H1N1 didn't grind to a halt the U.S. economy, yet this coronavirus has completely ground it to a halt. And we don't even have 1 million cases yet, if there will be, of the coronavirus. Yes, there's been more deaths, but we don't have the outlandish number of cases. And why is it that Trump is going on in these different tangents than the regular media, the mass media? We also hosted last week. Let's see, Dr. Yoram Lass, and Yoram Lass is a former health minister, the health minister in Israel. And as of last week, with Yoram, the numbers surrounding the coronavirus were nothing out of the ordinary for him. And again, he's the former director of the health ministry of Israel. He cautioned about a week ago, if I recall the discussion with him correctly, not to put much more emphasis on this coronavirus, this strain of it, COVID-19, than any flu. He said on this program, according to the World Health Organization, that 500 million people can die in a really bad year of the flu virus. I believe that was a number. If you listen to that episode and correct me, then please do correct me. We have a triple header coming your way today. And shortly, Bill Reed, W. Craig Reed, New York Times bestselling author of Red November, will be joining the program. We will be dialing him in here momentarily. We're going to follow that up at the 5 o'clock hour with Dr. Bandy Lee. And Dr. Lee is a psychiatrist out of Yale. This will be the second time she's joined the program. And she will be discussing her book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, where she makes the case that Donald Trump is mentally unfit and unstable to occupy the position he occupies. That is, from her opinion and view. And again, keep in mind as you listen to the program, I take no sides politically. Okay, I take no sides politically. I believe that the Council on Foreign Relations, whether you like it or not, I do believe that the Council on Foreign Relations controls, for the most part, both political agendas in this country. That would be Democrat and Republican parties, as they control the foreign relations. And who controls the Council on Foreign Relations, in my opinion, in my understanding, that would be the central bank. Okay. We go deeper. I go deeper on that subject. But I do encourage you to please go to my website, iantrottier.com, and find a list of some very impressive articles, namely Anthony Sutton, former Stanford Hoover fellow, for instance, who had wrote The Best Enemy the Money Can Buy, the U.S. banking organization built up the Soviet Union. You'll also find such things as King John I's concession of England to the Pope in 1213. Why would I put that there? William Charter, the King William I, William the Conqueror, prior to entrance into the City of London Corporation, his agreement that he made with the City of London, and how that central banking platform, how that ties into the U.S. Federal Reserve. There are a number of Philip Drew administration, Edward Mendel House, The Empire of the City, The Jekyll and Nature of British Government. There's a number of links on that website to interest you, iantrottier.com. And of course, the show can be heard every Wednesday. Again, as the past few weeks have been broadcasting with special guests beginning at the 4 o'clock hour, Eastern Standard PM. However, all guests, and before I bring on Bill, all guests come on at the 15-minute mark of the hour. We'll be ending today's show with David Knight, host of the David Knight Show. He'll be joining us at the 6:15 mark today. I guess what I wanted to tie up here was I began this 4 years ago because in Miami there was another health threat in form of Zika. Okay, now the Zika virus, and again, I know Bill's waiting, standing by. The Zika virus, just in a quick nutshell, what you should know about and question about the Zika virus is this. It was discovered from a rhesus macaque monkey in Uganda in 1947. Who funded the science behind that? The Rockefeller. Rockefellers also own a patent to this day. You can type it into your search. This is all public information. ATCC VR-84. That's the patent on the Zika virus owned by the Rockefeller. So why was this outbreak, if it was discovered in 1904, why did it become an issue in 2016 in Brazil, in Miami, and I think a case or two in San Diego? So should you be questioning some of the mega wealthy, right? Some of the big power players, the Rockefeller, i.e. the Rockefellers. Okay, let's bring on Bill Reed, and we'll go into his book, Spies of the Deep. Bringing on Bill Reed. Hello, Bill.
Hello there.
Hi there, Ian Trottier. Welcome to Discussions of Truth. How are you today, sir?
Outstanding.
Fantastic. Bill, it's a pleasure to have you on the program to discuss we obviously have a very tumultuous world now. We're facing a health pandemic globally. We have an economy in the United States that is completely ground to a halt. People are under stay-at-home orders from their local government, state governments. Yet we also have threats that proceed outside of the health globally. We've obviously got military threats and whatnot. You have you're the New York Times bestselling author of Red November, and you also bring your new book, Spies of the Deep, The Untold Truth About the Most Terrifying Incident in Submarine Naval History, and how Putin used the tragedy to ignite a new Cold War. For listeners, Bill, would you please tell us a little bit more about who you are and what caused you to write this book?
Absolutely. Well, I actually did spend time as a submariner, and in my book, Red November, I wrote about a very serious collision we had with a Russian submarine. We were about a mile off their coast, and they chased us for 3 days. We almost didn't make it back. So when I heard about the Kursk going down, which is a Russian submarine, this was about a decade after the Cold War ended in August of 2000. It hit me pretty hard because it brought back a lot of those memories of my experience in the Cold War. But then I heard there were 23 survivors.
Uh-huh.
And there was a delay by the Russian military. Putin, of course, was involved in getting those 23 survivors rescued, and they did perish. But what we were told by the Russians and what we were told by our own U.S. government, and what I discovered later from my fellow submariners who were on two submarines right nearby, the Memphis and the Toledo, was shocking. And that prompted me, took a while, but it prompted me to find the truth, to keep digging till I found the truth and bring it out, as painful as it is to hear, and then to discover how that is dramatically impacting our world today.
Right. So that's a good point. The name of the submarine that Bill is discussing is called the Kursk, K-U-R-S-K. Bill, how does that tragedy impact our world today, and how and why should listeners take heed of this, or why should they put importance and care about this?
Well, what a lot of people don't understand, and I didn't until I researched it, is that in August of 1999, Putin only had 2% of the vote. And that month, the Kursk submarine went on a top secret mission, and they actually got very close to the aircraft carrier Theodore Roosevelt. Now, we've just heard about the Roosevelt in the news.
Yeah.
Their captain was fired. They had coronavirus. So same carrier. And because of that mission success, Putin went down to the pier, met with them, became an honorary submariner. His father was a submariner. And he leveraged that to gain 53% of the vote. So he was elected in March of 2000. That's 20 years ago last month.
Uh-huh.
And then when the Kursk went down, he used that loss to propel Russia back to greatness, rebuild their military, bring us back into a Cold War, start a new resource war in the Arctic and other places. And now we are in an economic war with him, and this whole coronavirus epidemic is playing right into his hands.
Interesting you say that, and you bring up a good point here. What is, in your view, what is Putin's real agenda that motivates him to support, as it seems that he is, Donald Trump and interfere with that election?
Absolutely. Well, we think he invaded Ukraine because he just wanted to capture Crimea. Uh-huh. And the truth is there are four natural gas pipes that flow through Ukraine that feed Europe a third of their natural gas. That's where Russia makes most of its money, is energy, natural gas and oil. So his plan is to lock up these natural resources, which he's done in two key areas, trillions of tons of oil and gas and other natural resources. And his real agenda is to move away from what we call the petrodollar. That's the U.S. dollar backing all these energy
right.
trades.
Yeah.
He's tired of that because it undermines his ability to to basically have his agenda in terms of oil and gas trades. So this is the 1-2 punch. We're in a situation where he can take that second punch now that our economy's on the rocks and pull the rug on the petrodollar. If that happens, you think it's hard to get toilet paper now. Wait for another year or two.
Yeah. So, but you also bring up a good point here. We can get more into the gas piping and the oil lines, but with climate change, the Arctic is melting, and so you brought up the Arctic just moments ago. How is the environmental issue affecting sea routes and maritime shipping lanes?
Absolutely. So I think what we need to understand is that 90% of what gets to us that we buy at Costco, including
yeah.
toilet paper, gets to us typically by sea lanes. There's about six main choke points, Strait of Hormuz, Panama Canal, etc., that most ships have gone through. About a decade ago, everybody was going that route. Now, thousands and thousands of ships are
yeah.
going from Europe past Russia, then past Alaska through this northern sea route because they can. The ice is melting. Regardless of what you believe, that's what's happening.
It's happening, yeah.
And Putin owns this whole route. He's got a half a dozen military bases, ships, submarines. He's locked that whole route up. The U.S. has one medium-duty Coast Guard cutter that has no weapons on it.
Huh.
So we have a knife in a huge gunfight.
How do you see this? What's in your opinion? There's obviously conflicting stories. What do you see causing the melting of the Arctic ice? So what in regards to climate change? What's causing this?
Well, there are a lot of theories, and of course, we're seeing that some of this can be man-made. We're also seeing an uptick in the asteroid situation. We got a lot more asteroids coming our way. It could just be that we're going through a period of it, and that's causing some dust in our atmosphere. So there may be several things contributing to it, but that's really unimportant why it's being caused. The fact is it is being caused, and this is opening up these sea lanes, and Russia's locking them up. We are not. So we're in serious trouble if he locks up that sea lane because it takes 40% off the cost and the time, which is why it's so critical.
How did the Chinese fold into this, in your view?
Well, the Chinese have had their eyes on the Arctic for a while. They spent years petitioning the Arctic Council to get on that board, and they now are now there. And, of course, they see this as a huge boon to them because it takes 40% off cost and time for their routes as well. But the same thing's happening in the South China Sea. That's why they're building all these
right.
sand islands, because they found trillion tons worth of oil and gas down there, same as what we're seeing up in the Arctic.
Right. So Bill, for listeners out there, could it resonate with them that, hey, we should do whatever we need to do to get off our dependency of oil? This sounds like it might be driven in large part for controlling of natural resources, oil and gas.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, we can't go cold turkey overnight, but we do have options. We can innovate our way out. I visited some of the researchers at the Naval Research Labs in DC, and they've invented an incredible way to take seawater and turn it
wow.
into any kind of fuel. And it is negative carbon impact, meaning it will actually lower the carbon impact because it pulls it out of the ocean. The ocean has 140 times more carbon than the air. So these are innovative ways that we can get ourselves off of foreign energy dependency, create our own way to have fuel and so forth, and then perhaps further innovate with whether it's solar or other types of power. And we've got to innovate our way out of this. Otherwise, we're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Bill. Where can listeners find the information that you're talking about in regards to that naval study on seawater?
Absolutely. I've got a blog I wrote about that on my website. It's wcraigreed.com. wcraigreed.com. I've got blogs about all of this, as well as it's in my books, Spies of the Deep. It's available now, but coming out in July.
Great. If the petrodollar, if that is removed and crashes, what's the future for the U.S. dollar?
Well, that's where we're going to be in trouble. Now, we went off the gold standard in 74. Nixon took us off, and that's been propping us up. Petrodollar basically cut a deal with the Saudis that all of the oil and energy trades would be done with U.S. dollars. And that's the way it's been for decades. But now both Russia and China want to move away from that, and they have been. And if they do, that could undermine the value of our dollar. If that happens, we could see a crash far worse than what we've seen recently due to COVID-19.
Right. And we're looking at a possible catastrophic scenario for the U.S. economy, I would assume. From your understanding, what would be the next step if that economy crashes? We've got, I think, the currently at least 10 million unemployed filed for unemployment. The Federal Reserve stepping in to try to work a deal. Now they worked a deal with the U.S. Treasury. Hold on a moment there, Bill. Yep, sorry about that. They've worked a deal with the U.S. Treasury. Where does and how does the U.S. economy rebound from this? Even with the threat of the coronavirus, we've got a big deal. Now we're throwing in possible petrodollar collapsing. What's the future for the United States as far as you can see?
Well, again, we've got to innovate our way out of this. We've got to find ways that we can become less dependent upon the typical oil and gas. And we've also got to find a way to rebolster our economy. We've been off this gold standard. It's time to be looking at what our alternatives could be in relation to the petrodollar and make some serious decisions about how our economy is propped up. This is probably the best time to do it. Get our not only innovation in terms of energy, but also innovation in the way that we have our economy structured.
Right. Let's get back into Kursk, to the Kursk a little bit, so that listeners can understand a little more about this submarine issue here. That doesn't get any recognition by mainstream media. Nobody's talking about the Kursk. It looks like it was a ploy for Putin to gain power. This was a submarine carrying nuclear torpedo heads. Is that right, Bill?
Yes, that's correct. And at the time, they had not had a big naval exercise in a decade, and so we were desperately trying to find out about a top secret new weapon, a rocket torpedo they had invented. We sent over a former naval officer, Edmund Pope, to get plans for this. Well, he got arrested. He was thrown in jail in Russia. So we were desperate. We sent two submarines, spy subs. I used to be on one. And they were tasked with getting the information on this, listening and watching the exercise of the firing of this rocket torpedo. Well, it appears that one may have. This submarine, that's why it went down. Well, all that got buried, and it looks like Bill Clinton and Putin cut a deal in about a month after this happened to bury it. And so that's what Putin later used basically to wrest control from oligarchs, take control of the energy firms, and then rebuild Russia into what we see today and ignite a new Cold War far, far worse than the last one.
And what really is that Cold War for listeners to conceptualize? What is that based on?
Well, they have a lot of new, very interesting weapons. One that I not only wrote about in Spies of the Deep, but I also crafted a novel about this weapon. It's called Status Six. That's the name of the weapon. And it's 10 times larger. Find it or even know that it's been fired. They have tons of other new submarines and new weapons. Again, they're locking up the Arctic. They're locking up natural resources. These are all ways for Putin
Yeah.
to defend against anything we would do against him.
Interesting. Bill, let's get into the British and Norwegian rescue divers. What shocking discoveries did they make when they examined the sunken Kursk?
Well, what happened after the Cold War, and I wrote about this in Red November, we undertook a very top secret mission back in the Cold War called Ivy Bells. We used saturation divers. They were breathing helium and oxygen to basically wiretap Russian communication cables. Well, after the Cold War, we kept our program, but the Russians didn't. Saturation divers,
Right.
and they discovered some shocking things. That's what I wrote about in terms of what really happened during the rescue.
Yeah.
I interviewed those divers and their diving supervisors, and what I learned was just absolutely riveting, but
Sure.
also very shocking.
Sure. Why would the Russian rescue team fail to rescue the Kursk survivors, and how might that have actually caused the crew's demise?
Well, they actually, again, didn't have these saturation divers, so they weren't able to do proper rescue operations. They also had antiquated deep submergence rescue vehicles and were not able to properly mate with the led to the demise of the 23 survivors. That's what got buried and covered up by the Russians, by Putin, and they didn't want that to come out.
Yeah. How is this most terrifying tragedy in submarine history related to the current U.S. election? Bill, why is Russian tampering with the election to ensure Trump wins?
Well, again, what we're seeing is Putin being a consummate chess player. He thinks
Yeah.
six moves ahead. He's brilliant. Think what you like of him,
Right.
but he has shown that he's brilliant. And so he looks at this as perhaps lesser of a few evils. He has his agenda, especially in the Arctic. And right now, views other candidates as maybe less likely to keep their hands off of some things, or
Yeah.
perhaps a greater threat in relation to his long-term agenda.
Why will the sinking of the Kursk in August 2000 become known as a historical pivot point that propelled the world toward a new Cold War that's far more dangerous than the last one?
Well, as mentioned, this is what set Putin on his path. Again, the Kursk rocketed him from 2% to 53% of the vote. That's how he got elected in major part. And then leveraging this to rebuild Russia back to its greatness. But then during the actual salvage of the Kursk, did the operation. Dick Cheney, who
Yeah.
was running for vice president of the United States, was the former president of Halliburton, so he had access
Right.
to this information. And we taught them how to saturation dive. And now today, they're using what we taught them back then to potentially tap our communications cables or even cut those communication cables. If they cut our communication cables
Right.
between where we are in Europe? Wow. You think the coronavirus is difficult and is going to cause some severe economic hardship. What do you see what happens if our communication cables get cut?
Yeah, that's a really good Bill. Let's back up here to your New York Times bestseller, Red November. Again, this is a book that was on the New York Times bestselling list. What spawned you to write that?
Well, I had to wait 20 years before my gag orders were up, but I felt compelled to tell the story about my fellow submariners that nobody had talked about, as well as other underwater and operatives. So there's a number of operatives, my father included, who was involved in the Cold War, actually briefed President Kennedy about certain technologies that led to basically solving of the Cold War issue at that time with the Cuban.
Okay, Bill, I'm sorry, we had a technical glitch here that's been experiencing for the past couple minutes. Could you please repeat that last comment there? I apologize. Your father had briefed Kennedy, and can you expand from there?
Absolutely. My father, again, briefed President Kennedy during the Cuban Missile Crisis about a top secret technology that Kennedy then used to turn back Khrushchev at that time. Little known story. That, as well as many other stories, I felt would be lost to history if they weren't recorded.
Yep.
Including the Ivy Bells missions, what really happened there. Serious collision I was involved in, as well as other incidents that happened that nobody knew about. And I wanted to make sure they didn't get lost to history.
Bill, are you familiar with former Stanford Hoover fellow Anthony Sutton?
Yes, heard the name.
Okay, great, excellent. So we're really looking at two big main threats here. We've got, of course, the coronavirus that's totally throwing the economy in the U.S. To a halt globally. We've got most of the world completely shut down. It sounds like China's kind of regathering themselves. I don't know where Italy is at the moment. We've got Boris Johnson in the UK, got him in ICU as of yesterday. But now we've got this totally other issue going on that most people don't realize is happening. And that the trade routes, primarily through the Arctic, that Putin is now looking at, it looks like he's very close to perhaps manipulating and controlling, whereas we've got, I think, what'd you say, one Coast Guard cutter up there. What is the best thing that the listener, as listeners listen to what's happening with your expertise and your knowledge, what's the best thing for listeners to do? How can listeners act and make a difference?
Well, I think it's key to remember that we think politicians and government officials have the power, and they do not. We have the power in numbers. Every time we put our opinion out there in terms of a poll, like a Gallup poll, these politicians and government officials cower because they are beholden to us. But we do not use our power wisely. We listen to the mainstream media, and the mainstream media tells us who to vote for.
Right.
They spend all their time focused on this candidate or that candidate, and that's all we hear about is the ones they want us to hear. In Iran or Iraq or China, North Korea, wherever it might be, and understand geopolitical issues, understand the military, because you can't have someone in charge of the military that doesn't understand it and know how to wield the power when it's necessary. Again, like Teddy Roosevelt said, walk softly, but we need to carry a really big stick.
Eisenhower, as he was leaving office, you talked about your father briefing Kennedy. As Eisenhower was leaving office, you spoke about a military-industrial complex. We've had guests on the program say, I think Ray McGovern, as a matter of fact, former CIA operative for 17 years, had rephrased that and said what he was actually talking about was a military-industrial congressional complex. How do you feel about that term, in your view, Bill? What is the, let's keep it a military-industrial complex, what is that?
Well, we certainly do have money. in control of a lot of things. It's in control of all of the energy that we have and the energy trades.
Yeah.
And there is a massive military weapons complex. There are a lot of dollars being made from military buildup.
War.
And so there's
sure.
an incentive for those individuals to ensure there's world conflict, as would be obvious. Because it lines someone's pocket, not because it actually helps defend our country.
Right.
Or to make the right move. And so that's a difficult balance, but we need to keep those people in check. And that's why, again, back to electing the right leaders.
Right.
Who can stand strong, who can make sure there's a balance there, and that we don't wind up unnecessarily spending money where we shouldn't.
Do you think that the United States would be more productive with... now you go back to George Washington with a military mind in the Oval Office. We've got a business mind, I suppose, is a good way of saying it. In Trump, but would the country be better off having someone with military expertise occupy the Oval Office and work with the country politicians?
Well, at least with geopolitical and military understanding. And an excellent example would be Gordon England, former Secretary of the Navy. He wrote the foreword to one of my leadership books, Seven Secrets of Neuron Leadership. He did not serve in the military. However, he was former Secretary of the Navy and former Deputy Secretary of Defense. But he also had a very sharp business mind and a very sharp geopolitical mind. So he to lead our country.
Right.
Because that person will understand all of the different things under his or her control.
Bill, let's go to Iran as we wind this down. And I've got to apologize for listeners as there is this technical glitch we're experiencing. I want to get your take for a few moments on Iran. Is Iran a threat? Do they have nuclear weapon capabilities that are being hidden from the world?
Yes, absolutely. I've written in my books about a Soviet bio. Nuclear programs in Iran. That's not the case. It never has been. And therefore, we do know they have been pulling material out of their nuclear reactors. And it is very evident that they may be equipping what they call the Hoot rocket torpedo. And I remember I mentioned the rocket torpedo that the Russians had on the Kursk, could do about 200 knots underwater. Well, the Iranians now have one. They reverse engineered that, and they
wow.
call it the Hoot, and it can go 200, maybe even 300 knots under. Of our warships. So if the Theodore Roosevelt goes back to sea, and they are in the Strait of Hormuz. By the time they saw that torpedo coming, it would be too late.
Spies of the Deep is a 255-page, very well-documented conglomeration of this Kursk incident, how Putin started a new Cold War that sounds like the media is not giving much of any attention to. I encourage you to get it today. Bill, what are the avenues where folks can purchase your book?
Noble, anywhere books are sold, Spies of the Deep, just type that in and you'll find it. You can pre-order it today.
Thank you very much for joining Discussion of Truth, ladies and gentlemen. Bill Reed. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, so this is unfortunate. I know that the broadcast was having some glitching that began at about the 39-minute mark. So much of Bill's responses were cut off. I acknowledge that and see that happened. We again are a independent program, and from time to time we do experience these glitches. Bill Reed, Spies of the Deep, order it now. You heard him, Barnes and Noble or Amazon. I'll be back at the 5 o'clock hour with Dr. Bandy Lee. This has been Discussion of Truth, Wednesday, April 8th.